Hi, thank you. Oh, it's such an pleasure to be in dialogue with all these amazing works. So thank you also Lana and Sarah, right? And Cecilia, and thank you Laura and the organizers of the conference. So a little bit about me, just to give some context. I work across film, installation, performance. I'm really interested in, like many of us, kind of troubling what documentary can be, blending documentary techniques, working with archival footage and archives that may exist or do not exist yet, and blending that with narrative storytelling, sometimes creating fictional narratives, characters, really to engage with spaces and bodies that have been relegated to the margins or have been systematically erased or evicted from the historical record altogether. I'm particularly interested in the processes by which they are erased and also the implications of that. And landscape figures largely in my work. I'm drawn to precarious places, whether that be an underground queer club that's on the verge of eviction, Manhattan's Hudson River piers, a site of queer sociality, sex, and homelessness and art making, or the Florida Everglades, which this is an image from a film I'm making, a space of fugitivity, both in their long refusal to be tamed by settlers and in that they've long been a safe haven for people and life considered fugitive. I'm really interested in these places, these edges, these liminal, these in-between spaces, the coast. I grew up on the edge of the Florida Everglades. And so my new project is a hybrid feature documentary that's currently just entering production. I've been in a research and development phase for a while and shooting a lot, so I'm gonna share some of that footage. And it's really about the Everglades, it's about climate change and a ghost. So, told through Miami journalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas's 1947 book of the same title, River of Grass explores how Florida's contemporary landscape of injustice and vulnerability to climate change is historically rooted in the Everglades' enduring legacies of colonization, drainage, and development. Utilizing an essay style, a ghostly narrator, visuals evoking outer space, verite vignettes in the present, and abstracted field recordings, the film translates a vast landscape shaped by violence into a cinematic space. Over haunting Everglades landscapes, Marjorie, a time-traveling guide channeled by the land, recounts the Everglades' violent past and warns of the Sunshine State's precarious future as an eclectic group of people navigate their relationship with a compromised place. I keep hearing the word speculative a lot in our presentations, and I talk a lot about this character, Marjorie. She's warning of the future, but she's also speculating on what other futures could be possible. So who is Marjorie? I think many of you may be familiar with her name, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, as the namesake of the high school in Parkland, Florida, where a mass shooting took place on Valentine's Day in 2017. That was after I started this project, and it was interesting to have this person who is very well known in South Florida, but not well known in a more broader context, suddenly be catapulted into the media, but associated specifically with this kind of tragic violence, which I really understand to be, you know, different but not separate from the kind of violences that I'm exploring in this film. So Marjorie was a Miami-based American journalist. She was a suffragette, and she was a tireless Everglades advocate who lived to 108 years old, recording Miami's transformation from a small village to an urban metropolis. Her groundbreaking book, The Everglades River of Grass, which again was written in the 40s, transformed popular perception of the land from a worthless stagnant swamp into a valuable living river. And it also galvanized a movement for Everglades conservation. One thing that's most notable to me is that the book's intersectional approach, which traced Florida's indigenous history and explicitly named the impact of white settlers on the land, foreshadowed an environmental justice framework that would emerge nearly two decades later. She wasn't using that language, but I really see that present in the book and is one of the things that really draws me to it, and also the really poetic and beautiful way that she writes about the landscape, building it layer by layer from the rock that is kind of the foundation of Florida through the plants and life on the rock to the people, and telling this story. So what's my connection? I mentioned earlier, I grew up, I was born and raised on the outskirts of the Everglades on the southern Gulf Coast. And the issues that are addressed in the project are very personal to me. They affect my family, my home, and many of the communities I'm embedded in and communities I'm not a part of. This project really grows out of me kind of grappling, or began with me grappling with two central questions. One, what does it mean to be from a place that may cease to exist in my lifetime? That's predicted potentially for parts of the coast. And also, what does it mean to be a settler on stolen land? How am I complicit? In many ways, Marjorie, or rather this sort of character that is based on Marjorie and is also a little bit of me and also other voices in the film, she's a vehicle for me to explore my own position, how I'm complicit in the environment's decline and what's come to pass on this land, how the present came to be, how I might build solidarity across communities, and how together we might construct, imagine, or build a viable future that's just and sustainable in the face of climate collapse. I'm very drawn to Marjorie. We are different in many ways, but I share some, there's just some things that really resonate with me. She was transgressive and a rule breaker. She refused marriage in order to stay autonomous and devote her energy to writing, friendships, and the Everglades. I'll continue in a minute with that. I relate to her deeply as a feminist, an artist, a queer person, and someone also invested in environmental justice. I don't mean to imply that Marjorie was queer, although to my disappointment, I haven't found any proof. But she refused to marry, and she openly was celibate. She wouldn't have sex with men. She really wanted to save her energy for her art, her writing, and her friendships. So I'm really inspired by the way that she kind of was thinking about alternative family structures, too. So in order to understand the project, I have to explain a little bit about the Everglades, which some of you may know. I know there's at least one other Floridian here in the audience. But what are the Florida Everglades? They are, and I use they very intentionally, and I'll get to that in a minute, they are a vast subtropical region of slow-moving wetlands that once covered a large portion of South Florida, almost all of South Florida, actually. And for hundreds of years, they were greatly misunderstood by settlers in the United States. Land underwater was perceived as worthless. It was a waste of real estate. The Everglades couldn't be farmed or developed, and they obstructed passage between the Gulf and Atlantic coasts. So in the name of progress, and driven by Florida's establishment as a slave state in 1845, they needed to be drained, reclaimed, and developed. And the life within it, including a host of wildlife, animals, indigenous tribes, former slaves, poor white folks, had to be removed, and forcibly and violently in many cases. So in the 20th century, politicians finally figured out how to drain the swamp. There was actually a famous politician who ran with that as his slogan, drain the swamp. Reclaim the land, they were able to reclaim it and develop it. And there was a huge real estate boom in the 1920s. That's when Miami really balloons. Right after that real estate boom, there's two major hurricanes, one of which is made infamous in Zora Neale Hurston's book, Their Eyes Were Watching God. But despite this decimation, they just kept building. And you see that happening today. Hurricane, things go down. More and more people still keep moving to this state that is on really delicate land that cannot, I don't think, support the amount of people that are there. So an important thing to note is that the Everglades provide 1 in 3 Floridians with drinking water. The ecosystem acts as a natural filtration system, keeping out salt water, removing excess nutrients, and replenishing freshwater aquifers below that are underground. So they actually provide us with our drinking water and make it possible to live there. So by threatening and destroying them, we're threatening ourselves and our ability to live in South Florida. I just have this little animation that I'm going to show real quick that kind of gives you a sense of how much we've reshaped the Everglades watershed. So all that pink is development, and all that green is what was the watershed. I'll just stay here for a second. So really, I think at the heart of this project, I'm thinking about mending our relationship to water so that we can build this just and sustainable future in the face of climate change or collapse. And I really strongly believe that in order to do so, we must reckon with, acknowledge, and begin the process of dismantling the legacies of settler colonialism that have distorted our relationship to the land and to each other. So in this work, I'm committed to centering those most impacted while also showing how our struggles are interconnected. I really believe that in order to affect change on the ground, we need to be building coalitions with one another, uplifting one another, and fighting for all. So how can documentary be a tool for unpacking these ideas and not necessarily in a character-driven or information-driven way? That's kind of what I'm exploring here. So just going to be showing a kind of 6-minute, what I'm calling a sketch for the project. It gives a sense of kind of the affect, the mood, the aesthetics, some of the stories you'll encounter, the landscape. But to set that up, I'm gonna tell you a little bit more about who we meet in the film, or who we meet so far. As I said again, this is all also speculative because I'm in a very early stage of the process. So in the film, Marjorie's observations of a shifting and developing South Florida contextualize present-day scenes. Marjorie is like a satellite whirring above. At times, the viewer is unable to pinpoint whether her voice is of the past, the present, the future, or the other side. She introduces a constellation of interconnected sites, like stars or planetary bodies, in this galaxy called the Everglades. A Miccosukee grandmother who runs an airboat business in the Everglades leads a 110-mile healing prayer walk around Lake Okeechobee, which is that big lake that looks like an eyeball in the middle of Florida. It's a really important part of the watershed. The Swamp Apes, a group of veterans, they gather nightly to capture invasive Burmese pythons in the Everglades as a form of wilderness therapy. Pythons have been wreaking havoc and eating all the mammals in the Everglades and creating all kinds of problems. A white disabled man works as an alligator wrestler, turning traditional native capture techniques into spectacle for tourists. A young African-American woman competes in a beauty pageant against a backdrop of burning sugarcane fields that are built on reclaimed Everglades land. Those fields are burned half of the year and release toxic smoke into the air, and residents are dealing with a whole host of respiratory problems, cancer, asthma. And a prolonged toxic algae bloom ravages sea life and threatens a fisherman's multi-generational family business. When I was home filming last summer, the beaches were completely littered and covered with dead sea life, fish, manatees, sea turtles, dolphins. Huge trucks were coming in and taking them out and removing them, dump trucks. It's really devastating. Immigrant farm workers, many undocumented, deal with the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. It was really around the similar time of Maria in September 2017. And in Miami, long-term residents and artists are banding together to strategize around sea level rise and climate change gentrification. So these threads of past and present weave together, anchored by Marjorie's story. And together, I hope that they build, or will build, a complex and collective map of this unique and endangered place. Positioning past and present conversation, the film reveals how historical events inextricably shape life in contemporary Florida and the larger United States. While sometimes erased from the landscapes, as we saw in, you know, as we've seen in Puerto Rico or in Sarah, in your film, I really believe these violences of the past still haunt the landscape. They're still there, present with us, shaping how we experience the world today. The film really takes a form of a journey down a river through nonlinear time and with a ghost. And while it contains characters and information, again, it's not information or character driven per se. Much in the way that the Everglades are a mosaic of interconnected ecosystems, so are the scenes or moments we're dropped into. They unfold in real time, we meet characters, but we may never return to some of them, and they don't necessarily have traditional arcs. Really thinking about river as channel, as time, as a conduit, and the way that the water flows underground, sometimes invisibly connecting us. So this is about a 6-minute sketch, and then I had a sort of roughly assembled scene, but the sound is pretty low, so I might just play the sketch and then talk over, sort of conclude over the last scene, which is of the swamp apes. Where do you begin? Because when you think of it, history, the recorded time of the earth and of people, is in itself something like a river. To try to present it whole is to find oneself lost in the sense of continuing change. The source can be only the beginning in time and space, and the end is the future and the unknown. What we can know lies somewhere between.
The illnesses that you see in the water, in the air, in the ecosystem around you is a reflection of the illness that's in you. Florida is already past its capacity for the amount of people that can exist here with the environment existing. When decision makers make those decisions of development, of building roads, canals, continuing to pollute the environment, they're not just impacting the environment of the water and the plant and animal life, they're also impacting the indigenous people that survive in this environment. It seems like a continual perpetuation of the efforts to try to make our people, the indigenous people, assimilate into mainstream culture.
The sound is a little rough in this. It was hard to hear when we were trying it earlier, so I think I'll just sort of talk over it. But this is an assembly of a scene where this group, the Swamp Apes, are out on one of their, what they call their nightly road cruises, where they cruise through the Everglades looking for pythons. And they talk a lot about both feeling like this work is wilderness therapy and that they are healing the land while also healing themselves. They found that it's really helpful for PTSD. But also interestingly, one of the characters speaks about how beautiful the pythons are, how they're this beautiful beautiful creature, and it's a shame to have to capture and kill them, but that they're a manifestation of evil that humans have put here, and that removing them is continuing this work of stemming the tide against evils. So I want to conclude with some questions that just have been coming up for me in my work, and I think hopefully will resonate with other presenters and folks here who are makers. So I'm thinking a lot about what can landscape tell us about time, and what can time tell us about landscape? What are some artistic and tactical strategies for translating the complexities of landscape to cinematic space, not just through the recording of a camera, but through other creative means? I'm thinking about, I mentioned earlier this, the Everglades as they. Very intentionally in Marjorie's book, she calls them they, because they are plural. It's a collection of different ecosystems that are interconnected, and I'm really interested in this idea of they as their pronoun being plural, gender neutral, and how one might one, what does this question make sense? Oh, how might one film landscape with the subjectivity and dignity that one films a person, landscape as body and body as landscape. How does the landscape become embodied on screen? Moving away from being background, I think about Sindhu's presentation yesterday, moving away from being background, backdrop, or ground to figure. And also transmitting that plurality through a collective experience. So in this polyvocal way that I see in some of the other works as a strategy. Also, how can documentary, some fun sound here. How can documentary act as a historical intervention or a type of process that pushes back on erasure, historical erasure, and surfaces new narratives, not only from a corrective impulse, but in order to come to a whole new understanding altogether. I'm also thinking a lot about how do I, as a filmmaker from a white subject position, examine my positionality as a settler, guest on this land, while also decentering whiteness and centering communities most impacted by the legacies of settler colonialism. What might reparations and solidarity beyond traditional impact campaigns look like in the documentary field? I also think a lot about world making in my work, which I'm so happy to hear everyone speaking about. Of course, we're filmmakers. But I'm also thinking a lot about world unmaking and unbuilding in this age of climate collapse. Fred Moten in The Undercommons writes about how some of these systems and structures can't be repaired, and we don't want to repair them. Instead, we have to just tear the shit down. So I'm also thinking about what's possible when the world is coming undone, when it's in collapse. Thank you.